Stanza 27, Introduction. In this interior union, God communicates himself to the soul with such genuine love that no mother's affection, in which she tenderly caresses her child, nor brother's love, nor friendship is comparable to it. The tenderness and truth of love by which the immense Father favors and exalts this humble and loving soul reaches such a degree, O wonderful thing, worthy of all our awe and admiration, that the Father himself becomes subject to her for her exaltation, as though he were her servant and she his Lord. And he is as solicitous in favoring her as he would be if he were her slave and she his God. So profound is the humility and sweetness of God. In this communication of love, he exercises in some way that very service that he says in the Gospel he will render to his elect in heaven, that is, girding himself and passing from one to another, he will minister to them. Luke 12:37. He is occupied here in favoring and caressing the soul, like a mother who ministers to her child and nurses it at her own breast. The soul thereby comes to know the truth of Isaiah's words, "You shall be carried at her breast of God, and upon his knees you will be caressed." Isaiah 66. What then will be the soul's experience among such sovereign graces? How will she be dissolved in love? How thankful will she be to see the breasts of God given to her with such supreme and generous love? Aware that she has been set among so many delights, she makes a complete surrender of herself and gives him the breast of her will and love. She experiences this surrender of her soul in a way the bride did in the canticle when speaking to her bridegroom, "I turn to my beloved, and his turning is toward me. Come, my beloved, let us go into the field, let us abide together on the grange, let us rise very early and go to the vineyards to see if the vine is in flower and if the flowers bear fruit, if the pomegranates flourish. There will I give you my breasts, that is, I shall employ the delights and strength of my will in your love." Canticle 7:10-12. Because this mutual surrender of God and the soul is made in this union, she refers to it in the following stanza. "Thus he gave me his breast, there he taught me a sweet and living knowledge, and I gave myself to him, keeping nothing back. There I promised to be his bride." Commentary. In this stanza, the bride tells of the mutual surrender made in the spiritual espousal between the soul and God, saying that in the interior wine cellar of love, they were joined by the communication he made of himself to her, by freely offering her the breast of his love, in which he taught her wisdom and secrets, and by the complete surrender she made of herself to him, keeping nothing back for herself or for any other, promising to be his forever. The verse follows, "There he gave me his breast." Giving one's breast to another signifies the giving of love and friendship to another and revealing the secrets to him as a friend. When the soul says that there he gave her his breast, she means that he communicated his love and secrets to her there. God grants this communication to the soul in this state, and also that of which she speaks in the following verse, "There he taught me a sweet and living knowledge." The sweet and living knowledge, she says, he taught her, is mystical theology, that secret knowledge of God which spiritual persons call contemplation. This knowledge is very delightful because it is a knowledge through love. Love is the master of this knowledge and that which makes it wholly agreeable. Since God communicates this knowledge and understanding in the love with which he communicates himself to the soul, it is very delightful to the intellect, since it is a knowledge belonging to the intellect, and it is delightful to the will, since it is communicated in love, which pertains to the will. Then she says, and I gave myself to him, keeping nothing back. In that sweet drink of God, in which the soul is imbibed in him, she most willingly and with intense delight surrenders herself wholly to him, in the desire to be totally his and never to possess in herself anything other than him. God causes in this union the purity and perfection necessary for such a surrender. And since he transforms her in himself, he makes her entirely his own and empties her of all she possesses other than him. Hence, not only in her will, but also in her works, she is really and totally given to God, without keeping anything back, just as God has freely given himself entirely to her. This union is so affected that the two wills are mutually paid, surrendered, and satisfied, so that neither fails the other in anything, with the fidelity and stability of an espousal. She therefore adds, "There I promise to be his bride." Just as one who is a spouse does not love, care, or work for any other than her bridegroom, so the soul in this state has no affections of the will, nor knowledge in the intellect, nor care, nor work, nor appetite that is not entirely inclined toward God. She is, as it were, divine and deified, in such a way that in regard to all she can understand, she does not even suffer first movements contrary to God's will. As an imperfect soul is ordinarily inclined toward evil, at least in the first movements of its will, intellect, memory, and appetites, and as it has imperfections, so on the other hand, the soul in this state ordinarily inclines and moves toward God in the first movements of its intellect, memory, will, and appetites, because of the great help and stability it has in God, and its perfect conversion toward good. David clarifies all this when he said, "Speaking of the soul in this state, shall not my soul be subject to God? Yes, for from him do I receive salvation, and because he is my God and my Savior and my receiver, I shall no longer move." Psalm 61. By using the expression, "my receiver," he indicates that since his soul is received by God and united to him, it will no longer suffer any movement contrary to God. Obviously, then, the soul that has reached this state of spiritual espousal knows how to do nothing else than love and walk always with its spouse in the delights of love. Since in this state she has reached perfection, the form and nature of which, as St. Paul says, is love. Colossians 3:14. And since the more a soul loves, the more completely it loves, this soul that is now perfect is all love. if one may express it so, and all her actions love. She employs all her faculties and possessions in loving, giving up everything like the wise merchant. Matthew 13:44. For this treasure of love she has found hidden in God. She is conscious that love is so valuable in her beloved sight that he neither esteems nor makes use of anything else but love, and so she employs all her strength in the pure love of God, desiring to serve him perfectly. She does this not merely because he desires it, but also because the love by which she is united to him moves her to the love of God in and through all things. Like the bee that sucks honey from all the wildflowers and will not use them for anything else, the soul easily extracts the sweetness of love from all the things that happen to her. That is, she loves God in them. Thus everything leads her to love. And being informed and fortified as she is with love, she neither feels nor tastes nor knows the things that happen to her, whether delightful or bitter, since, as we said, the soul knows nothing else but love. Her pleasure in all things and in all transactions is always the delight of loving God. And to illustrate this, she speaks the following stanza. Stanza 28, Introduction. Because we said that God makes use of nothing other than love, it may prove beneficial to explain the reason for this prior to commenting on the stanza. The reason is that all our works and all our trials, even though they are the greatest possible, are nothing in the sight of God. For through them, we cannot give him anything or fulfill his only desire, which is the exaltation of the soul. Of these other things, he desires nothing for himself, since he has no need of them. If anything pleases him, it is the exaltation of the soul, since there is no way by which he can exalt her more than by making her equal to himself. He is pleased only with her love. For the property of love is to make the lover equal to the object loved. Since the soul in this state possesses perfect love, she is called the bride of the Son of God, which signifies equality with him. In this equality of friendship, the possessions of both are held in common. As the bridegroom himself said to his disciples, I have now called you my friends, because all that I have heard from my Father I have manifested to you. John 15:15. She then recites the stanza. Now I occupy my soul and all my energy in his service. I no longer tend the herd, nor have I any other work, now that my every act is love. Commentary. Since in this last stanza the soul, or better the bride, said she surrendered herself entirely to the bridegroom, without keeping anything back, she now tells her mode and method of accomplishing this, saying that now she occupies her soul and body, her faculties and all her ability, in nothing other than the service of her bridegroom. And she says that on this account she no longer goes about in search of her own gain or pleasures, nor occupies herself with things that matter foreign to God, and that even God, with God himself, she has no other style or in manner of dealing than the exercise of love, since she now traded and changed all her first manner of dealing for love, and is now said, "Now I occupy my soul." By saying that she occupies her soul, she refers to her surrender to the Beloved and that union of love, where now the soul and all the faculties, the intellect, memory, and will are dedicated and devoted to his service. She employs the intellect in understanding and carrying out the things that are more for his service, and the will in loving all that is pleasing to him and attaching it to him in all things, and her memory and care in what most pleases and serves him. And she adds, "And all my energy in his service." By all her energy, she refers to all that pertains to the sensory part of the soul. The sensory part includes the body with all its senses and faculties, interior and exterior, and all the natural ability, the four passions, the natural appetites, and all other energies. All of this, she says, she occupies. She does the rational and spiritual part referred to in the preceding verse, in the service of her Beloved. By directing the activity of the interior and exterior senses toward God, her use of the body is now conformed to his will. She also binds the four passions of the soul to him, for she does not rejoice except in God, nor hope in anything other than God. She fears only God and has no sorrow unless in relation to him. Likewise, all her appetites and cares go out only to God. All this energy is occupied in God, and so directed to him that even without adherence, all its parts, which we have mentioned, are inclined from the first movements to work in and for God. The intellect, will, and memory go out immediately toward God, and the affections, the senses, the desires, the appetites, hope, joy, and all the energy from the first instant inclined toward God, although, as I say, the soul may not advert to the fact that she is working for him. As a result, she frequently works for God and is occupied in him and in his affairs, without thinking or being aware that she is doing so. For her custom and habit of acting in this way causes her to lack adherence and care, and even the fervent acts she used to make in beginning some work. Because this energy is now all employed in God, the soul necessarily achieves the condition described in the following verse, "I no longer tend the herd." This is like saying, "I no longer follow after my pleasures and appetites." For having placed them in God and giving them to him, she no longer feeds them nor keeps them for herself. She does not merely say she no longer tends this herd, but even more, "Nor have I any other work." Before reaching this gift and surrender of herself and her energy to the Beloved, the soul usually has many unprofitable occupations by which she endeavors to serve her own appetite and that of others. For we can say she had as much work as she had many habitual imperfections. These habitual imperfections can be, for example, the trait or work of speaking about useless things, thinking about them, and also carrying them out, or of not making use of these actions in accord with the demands of perfection. She usually has desires to serve the appetites of others, which she does through ostentatiousness, compliments, flattery, human respect, and the effort to impress and please people by her actions, and many other useless things. In this fashion, she strives to satisfy people, employing for them all her care, desires, work, and finally, energy. She says she has no longer has all this work, because all her words, thoughts, and works are of God, and directed toward God, without any of the former imperfections. Thus the first means, I no longer tend to giving satisfaction to my appetite, nor that of others. Neither am I occupied or detained with other useless pastimes or things of the world, now that my every act is love. This is like saying that now all this work is directed to the practice of love of God, that is, all the ability of my soul and body, memory, intellect and will, interior and exterior senses, appetites of the sensory and spiritual part, move in love and because of love. Everything I do with love, and everything I suffer with the delight of love. David meant this when he said, I shall keep my strength for you, in Psalm 58. It should be known that when the soul reaches this state, all the activity of the spiritual and sensory part, in what it does, or in what it suffers, and in whatever manner, always causes more love and delight in God, as we have said. Even the very exercise of prayer and communion with God, in which she accustomed to considerations and methods, is now wholly the exercise of love. Hence, whether her work is temporal or spiritual, this soul can always say, now that my every act is love. Happy is the life and state, and happy the person who attains it, where everything is now the substance of love and the pleasure and delight of espousal. The bride in this state can indeed say to the divine bridegroom those words she spoke to him out of pure love in the canticle. All the new and old apples I have kept for you, Canticle 7:13, which is equivalent to saying, My beloved, all that is rough and toilsome I desire for your sake, all that is sweet and pleasant I desire for your sake. Yet the accommodated sense of this verse is that the soul, in this state of spiritual espousal, ordinarily walks in the union of love of God, which is habitual and loving attentiveness of the will to God.